Hi there, I'm Dr. Vivian Lowe, and you're on VLMD Rounds, a podcast on medical science and tools to optimize your health. Now, I wasn't going to talk about today's topic, but given what's been going on in the news and all the questions I've received from patients and friends and family members, I thought today's episode should be on lead and cadmium in chocolate. Let's go. So those of you who've been following the news, you know by now that Consumer Report came out with a study that showed that there's lead and cadmium in about 20 brands of chocolate that they examined. And this sparked a lot of concern immediately after. I had patients wanting to know, friends wanting to know, is it safe to eat chocolate products? Now, we've known actually for a very long time about this. In 1820, there was a report from London that basically showed that there was a lot of lead in confectionery that was sold across the city. And since then, we've been very aware of heavy metals in our food supply, and I just feel like this is probably recycled news. Maybe it was a slow news period and, you know, they felt the need to bring this up again. Nonetheless, in today's episode, we will talk about contamination of our food supply with heavy metals and what are some of the side effects, what to look out for, but most importantly, what to do about it. All right, should you actually stop consuming chocolate products? Right, we know that chocolate comes from cocoa trees, and some of you asked me about cacao. So cacao and cocoa are the same thing. When we talk about the cocoa tree and cocoa products, we are essentially talking about cacao as well. So we have the cocoa tree, and it bears these pods, and the cocoa beans or cacao beans are actually in the pot. Now, when we actually try to make chocolate, what we do is we pick the pods and we strip the beans from the pods. And then you take the beans and now you roast them. Now, this is the difference between culinary cocoa and cacao. So cocoa beans, which eventually become chocolate, those are roasted at very high temperatures. And cacao is just processed a little differently. They are roasted, but they use much lower temperatures. So that's really, in the culinary sense, the difference between cocoa and cacao. But again, they're the same product. They come from the same source, which is the cocoa tree. All right, so they roast these beans and then they grind them into a liquor. So this liquor is actually your chocolate, and that gets made into different chocolate products. Now, you know, if you're familiar with chocolates, you go to the store and you'll see like 70% chocolate and, you know, 80% chocolate. What does that mean? Essentially, chocolate is made up of cocoa solids, which is the carbs and a lot of the fiber. It also has cocoa butter in it, right? And so all of this will make up your chocolate. If it's just pure cocoa products, that would be 100% chocolate. And that is obviously a very dark chocolate. Now, if it's 70% chocolate, then what it means is that 70% of that bar comes from cocoa, and then the remaining 30% would be other ingredients such as milk and sugar and whatever other flavoring. Sometimes they put fruit and all that kind of stuff in the bar. All right, so obviously 100%, that very dark chocolate, is the pure chocolate itself. And this is true also of cocoa powder. Cocoa powder in itself is just the cocoa, not anything else added to it. Mostly the cocoa solids, little bit of cocoa butter as well in some varieties, all right? So you're really going to find a lot more of the cocoa in the cocoa solids in the powder that you use for your hot chocolate. And of course, in your dark chocolate bars as well. And this study was really focused, the one, you know, by Consumer Reports, they were really focused on the dark chocolate that you see in the supermarkets, right? And also a lot of the baking chocolate I think they use. You often see the 100% just pure chocolate bars for baking. So that's what they're focused on, because most of the heavy metals are really found in the cocoa solids. They're not found in the sugar or the milk, not so much in the cocoa butter as well. So we're really focused on the cocoa solids here. And so the more of milk and sugar products that you have in the bar, then the less of the cocoa solids, and therefore, we hope, the less contamination. But this is a matter, I think, of choose your poison, because die by sugar or die by like lead and cadmium, right? So, all right, onward. Now we know how we process the chocolate. So where do we get the lead and cadmium from? Well, mostly it's in the earth, and also we add to it by sort of industrial works that we do. Okay, so in the earth's crust, you have a lot of minerals in the soil. You'll find things like manganese, and you know, you'll have zinc, you'll have iron, you also have lead, and you also have cadmium. And this is particularly true in areas where you have sort of a volcanic region. You'll find, for example, a lot more cadmium there. Areas where they have a lot of forest fires, you'll also find more of the cadmium there. We then also have industrial works. So we have factories that do things like smelting and soldering and other sort of industrial processes. And if they're not very careful about how they dispose of some of their waste products, that gets into the soil, obviously it gets into the water supply, and then it leaches into the soil, and then the plants soak it up. Okay, so let's start now with cadmium. Cadmium, when I think of cadmium, I mostly, first thing I think about would be batteries, because yeah, you use cadmium in batteries and solar cells and some pigments as well, and in some of the industrial works that you have. The most toxic form would be in the fumes. So people who are working with cadmium, and they have to, you know, be careful about inhaling those fumes, because if they do inhale the fumes, that's really serious damage to the lungs. And often, you know, with a heavy dose, it can cause death. The rest of us, the human exposure, is going to be limited mostly to the diet. Now, I told you it's in the soil, and so obviously plants take up the cadmium. And the plants where you find the most cadmium would be cereal grains, and also the root vegetables, potatoes, that kind of stuff, but other types of vegetables as well. And, you know, with the grains, rice, cereal, for example, the products that are made from these cereal grains would then also contain the cadmium. You can also have cadmium in mushrooms, and you can find cadmium in organ meats, also shellfish. Now, there are some areas in the world that have more cadmium contamination in the soil. So I'm thinking of a region in Japan where the soil was heavily contaminated through industrial works with cadmium. And people who ate rice from this region really developed cadmium toxicity. The worst culprit in terms of cadmium would be actually cigarettes. So each cigarette contains about 2 micrograms of cadmium, and about 2 to 10% of that cadmium is transferred through the smoke. So if you're standing around a smoker, you're inhaling some of the cadmium from that cigarette. And remember, I told you inhaled cadmium is really toxic to the lungs. So another reason, A, not to smoke, but B, also to stay away from cigarette smoke. Now, through the diet, the rest of us were exposed to somewhere between 30 to 50 micrograms per day of cadmium. It's really the smokers that probably have the highest burden. They have about double the cadmium burden of the rest of us, right? So if you're a smoker, you're going to have the heaviest cadmium load. Now, with chronic cadmium exposure, you can see things like a mild anemia. People may develop anosmia, which is a loss of a sense of smell, and they can have maybe yellowing of their teeth. We can check your blood for cadmium. This is going to reflect recent cadmium exposure. So maybe you just inhaled some cadmium at work or something, right? So that's what the blood would tell you. Recent exposure. Urinary cadmium is more indicative of your total cadmium burden in your body, right? And obviously, if you have renal disease, that can affect that number as well. 50% of cadmium that goes into your body is accumulated in liver or kidney. And the biggest problem with it is it's excreted by the kidneys, but has a very, very long half-life. And this is also because the cadmium tends to bind to a protein called methylothionine, and this protein keeps being reabsorbed by the kidneys as well. So we keep, you know, trying to get rid of the cadmium, but we're also reabsorbing it. Now, when I looked at the studies for half-life of cadmium in the body, it's in the kidneys, 6 to 38 years. So that already tells you we don't know very much, because that's a huge range. 6, 38, you know. In the liver, 4 to 19 years. But, okay, I know it's a huge range, but notice we're talking in terms of years here. We're not talking in terms of days. So most people think that once you ingest the cadmium, it's staying in your body. It's not going anywhere. And we know that, you know, generally in babies, the cadmium levels in their body would be zero, but we start to accumulate more cadmium in our bodies as we age. And that's just because we ingest foods that have the cadmium in them. So that's a natural course. However, obviously, you want to minimize that, because the total cadmium burden as it accumulates is going to cause damage to your body, primarily kidney, liver, bones. Okay, so cadmium will increase oxidative stress. It will increase the formation of free radicals or reactive oxygen species and cause lipid peroxidation. So it damages lipids, which are in cell membranes, for example, all over your body, right? They also will decrease glutathione levels in your body, because glutathione is an antioxidant, and you have so much oxidative stress from the cadmium that you deplete the body of glutathione. You increase a lot of the inflammatory cytokines, and you also decrease nitric oxide formation. So nitric oxide is something that helps your blood vessels dilate, relax, so it lowers your blood pressure. It's very good for the health of your blood vessels, but cadmium can decrease the formation of nitric oxide. And of course, it can damage DNA and it can cause mutations, which is why it is considered a carcinogen. So we can see here that not a good idea to consume cadmium. So that's all the bad news. I have some good news. I really do have some good news. And, you know, it's this. When I was looking around, it turns out that really only 6% of ingested cadmium is absorbed. So that's a very small percentage, slightly high in kids, right? And it's higher if you have iron deficiency. So in people with iron deficiency, it's more like 9-10% of that cadmium is absorbed. And there's more cadmium absorbed if it's consumed sort of on an empty stomach or with water than if consumed with food, right? So already a very small amount is actually absorbed into the body, and it's even less if you consume it with food. So there's the good news, because even if a substance has cadmium in it, ingesting it, you know, you only really, if you're not iron deficient, absorbing maybe about 6% of that cadmium. All right, so that is the cadmium. Let's move on now to lead. So lead you can find in leaded gasoline, and then again in smelting of lead, pottery, a lot of lead-based pigments and paints, right? I think they've gotten rid of most of it, but apparently there's still this yellow chromate lead pigment that's still around and still being used. So a lot of the older houses, I'm in New England, a lot of the older houses still have lead paint on their walls. So that's where you could get exposed to it, especially kids. And the other place that you can find lead is in cosmetics. So I've known this for a long time. And when I first came to this country and realized this, I made sure only to purchase my cosmetics, especially lipstick, because, you know, the pigment, right? There's lead products in the lipstick, for example, and I didn't want to be ingesting that. So I would wait for my trips back home, and then in transit, I would try to buy my makeup in Europe, because they have stricter laws and they don't allow lead products in their cosmetics. So I would wait until I was traveling and in transit, go to the duty-free shops and buy my lipsticks there. I think it's better now. I've seen a lot of lead-free products here in America. So it's not as bad as, you know, several years ago even. But certainly, there might still be lead in some of your cosmetics. And lead affects basically every organ in your body, and especially the central nervous system, the CNS, which involves your brain, right? And kids, it affects adults, but kids, of course, are most vulnerable, and that's because they have a lot more soft tissue. So we've seen with kids that they have cognitive defects, they have lowered IQ, learning deficits, and behavioral problems when they've had a huge lead burden in their bodies. Adults, long-term exposure of adults to lead have been correlated with lowered cognition and also, interestingly, increased blood pressure, some anemia, kidney damage, preterm labor for pregnant women, and also infertility in males. Now, for lead, we can look at the blood for lead levels, but, you know, it's not really correlated to symptoms. So in 2012, the CDC basically gave the levels for, you know, max levels for lead in the blood. For adults, that's 10 micrograms per deciliter. For children, it's 5 micrograms per deciliter of whole blood. But as I said, this only gives the amount of lead in the blood and doesn't tell you how much is actually stored in the body. And it's not correlated to symptoms. So sometimes you can have someone with very low levels and yet they're symptomatic. And then you can have someone with very high blood levels and they're completely asymptomatic. So with patients in whom you suspect some lead exposure, heavy lead exposure, then, you know, these are people you really want to follow over time. Even if they're not symptomatic, I would say, especially if they're not symptomatic, you're going to be checking their blood levels to see if they're still, you know, having continued exposure to lead. But you also want to watch out for, you know, the subtle signs of lead intoxication. So those are the patients you want to follow closely and to take a good history and physical with. Now, lead, it can cause anemia in patients because it interferes with the synthesis of heme, and heme is part of hemoglobin, which is what your red blood cells have to carry oxygen around to different parts of your body. You can see it's very important. So people can develop an anemia with increased lead. And also it can impact cognition really by competing with calcium in these calcium ion channels. So it's a very potent inhibitor of voltage-dependent calcium channels, and it can cause a lot of problems in the brain as a result. I talked about cigarettes and cadmium, right? Well, you know, there's some lead in cigarettes as well, but this is especially true in counterfeit cigarettes. So I know that cigarette prices are high, so sometimes people try to purchase these counterfeit brands, and those brands really have very high levels of cadmium and lead. And, you know, you'd be exposing yourself to a lot of these toxic metals by purchasing some of those counterfeit brands. I did say you could find this lead in the lead paints in homes and stuff. So if you're doing any renovations, sanding, removing old paint, you have to worry about intoxication. The other source of lead that people don't often think about is actually in some traditional folk medicines. So they found lead in a significant proportion of Ayurvedic products, in some Chinese herbal medicines. And, you know, growing up in Singapore, we were very aware of that because every now and then there'd be an article in the newspaper about, you know, lead or mercury or some other heavy metal found in some folklore, traditional products. Okay, so always be careful and, you know, just kind of be aware that some of these medications may have high levels of heavy metals in them. The lead is actually quite quickly absorbed, and it can affect, as I said, your central nervous system, your cardiovascular system, your kidneys, the immune system, right? The maximum daily intake is supposed to be 1 microgram per day. But even this small amount, if taken chronically, can cause problems. And that is why in practically every article, every study I looked at, you know, you would see that they would emphasize there is no threshold value for lead levels below which its concentration is safe. Okay, I'll say that again. There is no threshold value below which lead concentration is safe. In other words, they're trying to tell you, just try not to get any lead in you. And extremely low but chronic exposure to lead can, you know, be linked to reduced cognition in children and also in adults. And I think I saw somewhere that with adults that had had chronic exposure to lead in childhood, they were found to actually have decreased brain volumes, especially in the prefrontal cortex, right? So when they looked by MRI, they found that these people who had been exposed in childhood to lead had shrunken brain volumes. Now, it really depends on the amount of lead that you've ingested in an acute situation. You're going to see acute lead intoxication at the lower end, 25 to 60, let's say, micrograms per deciliter, you're going to see things like foggy brain, irritability, maybe some behavioral issues, some headache. But when we get to higher levels, like greater than 80 micrograms per deciliter, those people can present with abdominal colic, so they have a lot of abdominal pain. And by the time you get to above 100 micrograms per deciliter, they're very seriously ill. They have encephalopathy, they have brain swelling, they can go into a coma, have seizures, and also likely die from it, okay? And of course, it's worse in kids. So I said greater than 100 micrograms per deciliter. For kids, greater than 70, and they're going to have seizures and problems, severe problems. They'll probably be in the ICU for that. Okay, short-term exposure, you can still have the sort of lesser symptoms, nausea, vomiting, headaches, you know, depression, that kind of stuff, numbness and tingling, but really pretty non-specific with that. And that's why you really have to follow those patients in whom you suspect that chronic exposure to lead. Now, what do we know about absorption of lead once you've ingested it? So it turns out about 20% of inorganic lead that is consumed is absorbed. 20% in adults. In kids, that's 50%. But, and there's a big but, if you're consuming that lead on an empty stomach, then the absorption goes up to 60 to 80% in adults and pretty much 100% in children. Okay, so when you consume your chocolate is going to be really important. Now, obviously, I don't like the idea of snacking, but you definitely don't want to give a chocolate snack to your child, okay? So most kids, you know, if you're giving them chocolate, I doubt it's dark chocolate, although you might be giving them a cocoa drink, a hot chocolate, okay? So you want to make sure that if you're going to give chocolate products to your kids or you're going to consume them yourself, you probably want to limit it to after a meal, maybe as a dessert, you know. You can have your chocolate product then because the absorption is much decreased. So in adults, like I said, it's about 20% at that point. 50% still pretty high in the kids, but much, much higher if you're consuming this on an empty stomach. And, you know, once you consume it, it's felt that a lot of this lead can be non-toxic in the sense that it's sequestered in your bones and in your teeth and, you know, sort of stuck in there in the bones and teeth. And the rate of absorption into those tissues in adults is about 94%. But in kids, again, it's only 70%. Now, kids, as they're growing and they're developing, their bones are constantly remodeling. So this means they're also breaking down bone and reforming them, right? And as they break down bone, any lead that may be stored there gets released again into the bloodstream. And kids also have, you know, proportionally more soft tissue than bone, right? And then when compared to adults. And so they're going to be, again, more vulnerable to any lead exposure. In terms of the half-life of lead in the blood, it's about 40 days longer, again, in children, okay? And treatment for acute exposure, you can do something called chelation therapy, and this is giving them an IV solution that will bind up the lead and remove it. Okay, so that's one possibility, especially for someone with an acute intoxication. You might want to try it in people who have chronic exposure and you're trying to decrease their overall lead burden in their bodies, but unfortunately, while it can lower the blood levels of lead, chelation therapy hasn't really done anything to improve cognitive performance in kids. And probably because this is, by the time you discover this and start the treatment, it's kind of too late and you've done some damage to the nervous system as well. Okay, so let's do our brief wrap up now. We talked about where chocolate comes from and how it's produced. And I just want to add that it's actually in the processing that you get the most contamination. So it turns out the cocoa plant is very, very smart. It absorbs a lot of minerals from the soil. And this is great if it's absorbing zinc and calcium and we ingest those things because, you know, it's a good source of minerals for us. But it also absorbs a lot of the heavy metals. And most of this is actually going to be in the pot shell. And the cocoa beans themselves, when they've done studies, they haven't actually found much lead or cadmium in the cocoa beans themselves. So it seems as if the plant has a way of protecting the beans by actually concentrating all those toxic minerals in the shell. However, when we're stripping the beans from the shell, when we're processing it, and you know, in transportation, actually the processing part is where we get the contamination into the chocolate, okay? And that's how we get most of those toxic metals in the chocolate. So we talked about cadmium and you know, some of its toxic effects in the body. The most important thing to remember there is that once in the body, it pretty much stays there for the rest of your life. And your aim is just to not accumulate that much cadmium. You're going to accumulate some, you just want to minimize that level. At very high levels, it can damage your kidney, damages your liver, and it causes oxidative stress, brings about inflammation, and is also carcinogenic. The good news is that actually very little of cadmium is absorbed, only 6%. Higher, about 10%, if you have iron deficiency. So make sure you're not iron deficient. And also, less is absorbed if you're eating it with food as opposed to just drinking water with it, right? So you want to make sure that you're eating your chocolate with food. The same is true of lead in the sense that, okay, it is highly toxic and it's worse than cadmium because it has really profound CNS effects, especially on kids, but also in adults. And these defects, you know, they are irreversible and they are lifelong, and people have decreased cognitive performance and lowered IQ and behavioral issues associated with lead toxicity. Now, in chronic lead toxicity, it stresses out the brain and shrinks your brain, but it is toxic to pretty much any organ that you can think of. The good news, again, with lead is that you can decrease the amount that is absorbed by eating the chocolate with food and not on an empty stomach. Because with food, it will be only about 20% that's absorbed in adults, still a pretty high burden in kids, about 50%. But if you take it on an empty stomach, about, you know, 60 to 80% is absorbed in adults, and, you know, 100% is absorbed for the kids. One other thing I forgot to mention, you can try to consume your chocolate products again with some metal chelators. So citric acid is a non-specific chelator, and you could try to consume it with that in hopes of binding some of this, you know, the lead and the cadmium as well. You could also try pyridoxamine and benfotiamine, and these are derivatives of B vitamin. So these are supplements you can take concurrently when you're ingesting the chocolate products, and that might help in binding some of the heavy metals and, you know, decreasing the absorption in the body. And importantly, you want to make sure you don't have mineral deficiency. So iron deficiency, zinc deficiency, calcium deficiency can increase the absorption of lead, also of cadmium, right? So you want to correct any mineral deficiencies in the body. Right. I hope that was helpful, and I hope you're breathing a sigh of relief. In short, this is not new. We've known about lead and cadmium and their worst products in the food supply. The main thing is to be smart about it. My recommendation is that you pay attention to the dose and the frequency. Obviously, you don't want, actually, no one probably should be eating chocolate every day. I know the chocolate lovers are going to have an issue with that one, but in general, I am not a chocolate person. I love vanilla. I did check vanilla, and so far, so good. But I think that most of our food supply is contaminated anyway. But bottom line is minimize your exposure, especially your kids' exposure to chocolate products, and make sure that they consume it. If they're going to consume it, they have it with a meal. Okay? That's the big bottom line. Oh, and while we're at it, we might as well also limit the intake of grain-based products, the wheat and also rice, because you're going to find contamination in those products as well. So, you know, no processed foods has always been my rule, and I think that's a good rule to follow. Okay, if you have questions for me, then please join me at my live Q&A. You can go on my website, vivianlohmd.com, vivianlohmd.com, to get a schedule of the live stream events. And you can also subscribe to my newsletter there. If you found today's episode helpful, then please support my channel. Please like and subscribe, and maybe share this with a friend or two. Right? For now, signing out from VLMD Rounds, I am Dr. Vivian Lowe, and I sing the body electric. Bye.